So I thought I would just talk for a few moments, a short little lesson about being shrewd. The term shrewd or shrewdness is a term we still use, but it's not that common in our usage today. We would probably use something more of one of the synonyms to it, which we'll talk about tonight. But it is used in the Bible, it is used in the Old Testament, used in the New Testament. But the way that it is used in some of these passages can be kind of challenging. It's not brought forward to us quite like other attributes that we are to have as Christians. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about shrewdness in the Bible with the ultimate goal of what God really wants us to be, and that is to be spiritually shrewd. Spiritually shrewd. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 16 is a good example of how it is used. This is the context where Jesus is sending out his apostles for the first time, sending them two by two to go into these various cities and villages to preach about the kingdom of God. And much of chapter 10 is not them going out, but Jesus preparing them, Jesus giving them instruction. And so in verse 16, one of the instructions he gives to them is this. He says, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves." Now, that's a good example of what we're talking about, because serpents don't have a very good track record in the Bible. Obviously, they're associated first and foremost with Satan, with death, with evil. And yet, Jesus says to them, "I want you to be like serpents." In what way? Well, be shrewd like that. And the word shrewd has in the concept of it being wise, but in a shrewd way. And yet, he then says, "But I want you not to be like serpents. I want you to be innocent, like doves." And as you look at that, even though he's telling them to be both of these things, they seem to be in contrast to one another. We would say, you know, being shrewd as a serpent, that doesn't sound right. Being innocent as a dove, that's more what we expect of how we are taught. And so, shrewdness is not always condemned in the Bible, though it is so often associated with evil and sin. But sometimes shrewdness, even connected to being evil, is praise. And we're not used to that, are we? We're not used to something connected with evil or connected with sin and then being told you need to be just like that. We're more used to being innocent as doves, being like children. Right? Those things that are innocent, those things that are righteous. But this is one time in the Bible where sometimes we're told that we're supposed to be like evil people. And we're going to try to understand what is meant by this shrewdness. So, in 2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 3, if you want to turn over there, David had a brother by the name of Jonadab. And he is described in the Old Testament as being a shrewd man. And so in 2 Samuel chapter 13 and in verse 3 we read, "But Ammon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimea, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very shrewd man." And so in that context, we're not exactly sure. Is this a good quality? Is this a bad quality? He's a very shrewd man. He's a very wise man. He's a very cunning man. But what we find out later on, is that out of this shrewdness, he coaches Ammon of how he can take advantage and basically rape Tamar, who he says he is in love with. He uses his shrewdness for evil. And that's just one of many examples we have in the Bible. Acts chapter 7, verse 19. Stephen, in giving this great discourse that eventually he pays with with his life, talks about Pharaoh. The Pharaoh that rose up and did not know Joseph as being a shrewd man. Look, if you would, at Acts 7 and in verse 19, where he says these words. let's add verse 18 and 19. Until there rose another king over Egypt who knew nothing about Joseph. It was he who took shrewd advantage of our race and mistreated our fathers so that they would expose their infants and that they would not survive. And so again, you have shrewdness that is associated with evil in the Bible. But it's not necessarily always condemned. Now, there are times where shrewdness is completely condemned, but not always. For example, if you would turn with me. There we go. To Job chapter 5. Job 5, verse 12. This is where one of Job's friends, Eliphaz, is speaking, I believe. And look at what he says as he describes God and the power of God. In verse 12, Eliphaz says of God, and he frustrates the plotting of the shrewd, so that their hands cannot attain success. He captures the wise by their own shrewdness, and the advice of the cunning is quickly thwarted. And that's kind of the neat thing about these poetic books. You can see what shrewdness is. It's wisdom. He talks about that. It is also cunning, as he talks about that. And so it starts to get a sense of what exactly this shrewdness is. But Eliphaz says, it's evil, and what? God's more powerful than the shrewd. He can thwart their plans. Look, if you would, at Proverbs 19. Proverbs chapter 19. And in verse 24. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, but will not even bring it back to his mouth. Strike a scoffer, and the naive may become shrewd, but reprove one who has understanding, and he will gain knowledge. Again, what happens? You have the scoffer who, when you reprove him, well, he learns from it, but not in a good way. When you reprove him, he just becomes more shrewd. More cunning. Not that the evil goes away, but a man of understanding, if you reprove him, he will gain righteous knowledge. Again, clearly Solomon is condemning this idea of being wise and shrewd for evil. And then Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 22. Jeremiah, God, I guess we say God through Jeremiah, is condemning Israel, Judah in his days. And look at what he says about them. Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 22. He's not praising them. He's obviously condemning them. And so in verse 2, he says, and you will swear as the Lord lives, in truth, in justice, in righteousness. Then, 22, sorry. I keep getting my numbers mixed up. Verse 22, chapter 4, verse 22. For my people are foolish. They know me not. They are stupid children and have no understanding. They are shrewd to do evil, but to do good, they do not know. And so, there are times in the Bible that shrewdness is seen for what it is. It is evil, it is sinful, it is condemned. But you'll notice even in these passages that shrewdness is is so often associated with sin and evil. And yet, what happens is that we are told sometimes that as Christians, we are to be shrewd. And probably one of the best examples is in Luke 16 and in verse 8. And this is the one we want to focus on the rest of the time. Turn with me, if you would, to Luke chapter 16, where Jesus gives a parable that we often refer to as the parable of the unrighteous servant. It's one of the most difficult parables to digest, to understand, because of the very things we've been talking about. So in Luke 16, verse 1, we read, "Now he was also saying to disciples that there was a rich man who had a manager. And this manager was reported to him as squandering his possessions. And he called him and he said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an accounting of your management, for you can no longer be manager.'" And look at what this shrewd manager does. "The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do, since my master is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig. I am ashamed to beg. I know what I shall do, so that when I am removed from the management, people will welcome me into their homes.' And so he summoned each one of his master's debtors. And he began saying to the first one, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, I owe him 100 measures of oil. And he said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down, and quickly write 50. He cuts it down by 50%. Then he said to another, 'How much do you owe?' And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write out 80. And his master, look at this, when he found out about it, his master praised the unrighteous manager because he acted shrewdly. For the sons of this age are more shrewd in relation to their own kind than the sons of light.'" And that last part of verse 8 is where Jesus is addressing kind of the lesson that he's trying to bring out. And so you have this master who has been robbed by his manager, by his chief steward, and when he finds out about it, he is not upset, he is impressed. That just doesn't sound like good Christian teaching, does it? That just kind of seems out of place. So what are we talking about when we talk about the concept of shrewdness? Well, the concept of shrewdness is difficult because the shrewd ones are evil. They're connected to evil. It is difficult, come on, because they use their shrewdness to accomplish evil. And then once they do that, they are often praised for their shrewdness. And so when we are, as Christians, are told to be shrewd, we're kind of like, well, are we supposed to be evil then? Is there some times where it's good to be sinful? It's kind of a hard concept to grasp, because I can't think of anything in the Bible that matches it, where we take an evil example and say, that's good. We take someone that is sinful and say, we need to be just like that. That's what Jesus is doing here and in other places. He takes that which is evil and says, you need to imitate that. There are some people that say these athletes who have taken steroids and performance-enhancing drugs were very shrewd, because it took a long time for the technology to catch up. And by the time that they were found out, and some perhaps weren't even found out, they were what? Well, by using these performance-enhancing drugs like steroids, they were able to extend their career, and therefore they were able to make more money, and they were able to play better, and so they were able to make even more money, and they were able to set records, and they became very famous for that. And even though many of them were caught and have been named, they don't have to give up the money. They still get to enjoy that.
They don't have to give up the memories of breaking those records.
They still are there. And that's kind of the thing right now.
What do we do with these records that were tainted by steroids? Are we going to look at them differently? Do we have a little asterisk by them? And so there are many people who think that these athletes who take this steroids and performance enhancing drugs are very shrewd. Is it breaking the rules? It absolutely is. But some think that they're very smart to do that. Let me give another example of shrewdness. In my senior year of high school, we had to take a government class. And so there were different things that we did to learn about how government works and all that. And you know that in politics, that's a place where there's a lot of shrewdness, isn't there? Well, this particular activity, the teacher divided us into two political groups. Divided the class in half. And so we had like 15 that was in political party A, and there was 15 in political party B, which I was part of. And what we were supposed to do is we were supposed to each elect a candidate to run for president. And then we were going to take a vote, and whoever got the most votes was going to win. Well, Party A elected someone from Party A as their candidate. And Party B elected someone from their party to be candidate. And then our teacher came over to us secretly. He said, "Hey, one of you elect another A member to run for president." So we said, "Okay, if you say you do it." And so we elected Mary Jane. And Mary Jane was like, "Oh, wow. Well, thank you." So "I accept." And so we had the vote, we ran the tallies, and we were all excited. And Group A wasn't very happy with the results. Do you see what happened? B won. They got 15 votes. A lost because they split 8-7. It's evil. It's just backhanded. But it was very shrewd. And when Group A finally figured out why we did what we did, again, not our own, but by our teacher, they were all upset. "That's not fair. We didn't know that's why you elected that person." And of course, he did it to show that very thing, the shrewdness of all of that. And so this concept of shrewdness it's a difficult one because it's associated with evil, but we're told to be like it. So shrewdness is used to sometimes praise. But here's the thing. Here's the thing we have to understand. It is not the evil that is being condoned. It is not the evil that we are told to mock or to imitate or to follow. Instead, what Jesus is doing is that Jesus is looking at the commitment, the desire, the wisdom of those that are evil to accomplish the evil. If we were to span it out like this, this is what's being praised. The people, the evil who are just so committed to that evil. The dedication they have to get their way, though it be evil. The word crafty, the craftiness that they will use to obtain what they want, even through sinful means. Like I said, wisdom of the shrewd, or cunning, as we've talked about. And so these are the things that are being set apart for us. These are the things that we are to be. We are to be like the evil in their dedication, their commitment, their craftiness, their wisdom, and cunning. Now, of course, yes, they use all of that to what? Accomplish evil. Some selfish desire. Some financial reward. Some political position. But that's not what he wants. He doesn't want us to focus on the evil. He wants us to focus on the commitment, the dedication, the craftiness, the wisdom, and the cunning of the shrewd.
So again, in Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, he says to his apostles, as you go out, you are to be shrewd as serpents. In other words, you are to be, one, dedicated to go out there and preach the kingdom of God. You're supposed to do it smart. You're supposed to use your wisdom. You're supposed to want to be like those shrewd, but for good. And that's why he adds to that, being innocent as doves. But let's go back to Luke 16. Let's go back to Luke 16 and this unrighteous manager. And in Luke 16 again, in verse 8, and his master praised the unrighteous manager because he had acted shrewdly. And look at what he says at the end. For the sons of this age are more shrewd in relation to their own kind than the sons of light. So he's turning to this crowd. He says, you are what? You're sons of light. You are righteous. You are spiritual. You have what? Spiritual goals. You want to accomplish things. There are people that are in the world, and they have goals. They're evil goals. They're physical, fleshly, selfish goals. But when you compare the two, this group over here, they are a lot more shrewd. In other words, they want it a lot. They appear to want it more than the sons of light. They're willing to do more to achieve what they want to achieve than the sons of light. What they want to achieve, it's temporary. It's fleshly. It's selfish. What we want to achieve is spiritual. And so, that's the comparison. Someone once put it this way. They simply want it more. They simply want it more. The world is better served by its servants than God is served by His. But our reward is greater. Our reward is worth more. And so what Jesus is saying is backwards. We should be more desirous. We should be more dedicated. We should be more shrewd for what we want. Not in an evil way, but innocent as doves. In a righteous way. And so, it's a good lesson, once we understand it, for us to ask ourselves, how committed are we to what we want to accomplish? How committed are we to what? Being shrewd against sin. Well, Paul gives us a pretty good example. Go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, if you would. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. How shrewd was Paul when it came to mastering sin in his body? How shrewd was he when it came to developing that self-control to let the Spirit win out over the flesh? Well, he says in chapter 9, beginning in verse 19, look at his words. He says, for though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all, so that I may win the more. To the Jews I became as a Jew, so that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law, though not being myself under the law, so that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without the law, as without the law, though not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, so that I might win those who are without the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that I, by all means, may save some. I do all things for the sake of the gospel, so that I may become a fellow partaker of it. The first thing Paul talks about is saving souls. Can you think of anyone that wanted to save souls more than Paul? Can you think of anyone that was willing to do more to save souls than the Apostle Paul? Other than, of course, Jesus. But Paul was imitating Christ as he did this. I want to tell you, this is a great lesson for me because I have not perfected this even close. Paul says, I hang around all kinds of people. And I associate with them. And I try to become like, I try to understand them. Even though I'm not under the law, I want to understand people that are under the law. I want to be understanding that in hopes. Not that they can persuade me, that I can persuade them. I hang around the weak. You're not saying that's an easy thing to do, but I become like the weak. I try to understand the weak in hopes that what? I can make them strong in the gospel. That I can save their souls. Maybe you're like me. I don't like people that are different than me. But that's not very good at trying to save souls. Sometimes I don't put forth the effort I need to. Sometimes I don't spend enough time with people. I can fully admit that. This is a good sermon for me. Is it a good sermon for you? I need to be more shrewd when it comes to saving souls. There's people that are putting forth a lot more effort than I am. For lesser rewards. And then Paul says in verse 24, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run such a way that you may win. Everyone competes in the games, exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. And therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. But I discipline my body and I make it my slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified." Do you see both of those terms? Verse 27. Why does Paul work so hard to have control over his body, over his desire, over his sinful wishes? It's because he doesn't want to be disqualified. He doesn't want to save souls, and then at the end, he comes up short. But did you see that as well when it came to the preach of the gospel? When he became all things to all men? Verse 23, let's read it again. He says, "I do all things for the sake of the gospel, so that I may become a fellow partaker of it." Even in his evangelism, Paul says, it helps me. It's a result that I will also be a partaker of it. Yes, he wanted all of these, the weak, the under the law, the Jews, those that are not under the law, to be partakers of it. But all of that was tantamount to him becoming a fellow partaker of it as well. So how shrewd are we when it comes to sin, fighting against it? How shrewd are we in wanting to try to save souls? Are we willing, like Paul, to become all things to all men? How shrewd are we to Christ, this church? How committed are we? I know that there are people like in sports. They spend a lot more time with their team and practicing and trying to get better and getting ready for the game than Christians do. And being together and serving and worshiping Christ. As we talked about this morning, in trying to get those UFOs of the Bible. How committed are we? We should be more committed than those of the world who are what, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, they're going for a perishable wreath. We an imperishable wreath. How shrewd are we when it comes to a commitment to Christ as church? And how shrewd are we when it comes to heaven? I'm not denying the grace of God. We all stand before God because of that grace. We all are who we are because of the grace of God. But there is two sides to salvation. The Bible teaches that God has a side. God has to do His part, and He's done it. He has sent His only begotten Son. He has opened His arms to say, I want to forgive you. I want to take you in. Even if it means taking you back. But the Bible teaches there's another part, and that's the part we play. And sometimes Christians let things of the world distract them. They lose their focus. They are dedicated to Christ when it's convenient. But I'm convinced, even in my own life, if I can truly understand how great heaven's going to be, then I truly understand this world has no comparison. As Jesus said, there is nothing you can profit in this world to gain something in the world, even the whole world, at the cost of your soul. When you compare your shrewdness to the shrewdness of the world, how do you compare? It's a difficult concept, but I want to tell you, it's a powerful point, isn't it? God needs to be served better by His team than the world and Satan is by His players. Tonight you have an invitation to rededicate your life to God, maybe to start your life with God. I definitely want us to know, like Paul, we need to go out there and look for those opportunities to be all things to all people. Will it take time? It absolutely will take our time. Will it take our energy? It absolutely will take our energy. But there's nothing in this world that is so pressing that we can't make that effort to be shrewd when it comes to the saving of souls. If we can help you save a soul tonight, won't you let that be known as together we stand and as we sing.